While the news cycle around the National Hockey League has dried up a little bit, we are still waiting for a couple dominoes to drop. But in the meantime, there are a few signings we do have to get to. A couple players getting their jerseys brought to the rafters. And former bench boss, the Montreal Canadiens, speaks out about his tenure with the organization. All that coming up here in episode 144 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Yes, welcome in on this Wednesday edition of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Gamard, your host, as always. I know I normally do a Tuesday podcast. It was funny. So I prepped everything yesterday, had all my information sent ready to go, had my notes, got home, totally blanked on doing it. Started doing other things, started relaxing a little bit. It's nice. I was doing some work over the long weekend as well. And I woke up this morning and I went, I didn't even do the podcast. I didn't even make a post about it. Cause normally if I delay it a day, I'll throw a message out on Twitter, on Instagram, and I'll say, hey, sorry about the delay, new episode coming out Wednesday. And just never occurred to me. So I apologize if it's regular that you listen to it on a Tuesday afternoon or whatever the case may be. I feel like any sort of podcast we're getting nowadays is good. So hopefully this is getting to you and it's not not off timely to say, for better lack of terms. But nevertheless, follow along ST Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.com, wherever you get your podcast. Free agency, one big name still in the market right now. And I was listening, actually. It was kind of good, actually. I didn't do this podcast yesterday because I listened to a few other shows and individuals who spoke on the matter, so I'll have a little bit more to kind of go through involving Nazem Kadri. And Nazem Kadri would be the individual who we start the show with. John Klingberg has a brand new home in Anaheim. Why? I've listened to a few other things, and it's exactly my thought process, and I'll explain what it is. A few players getting their jerseys brought to the rafters, and we'll talk about Dominic Ducharme, who spoke out about the Montreal Canadiens, the way he was treated, and the way things did not go, and a couple other signings that took place before the arbitration before arbitration meetings. There are still some players waiting to go, but we'll get to those at the end of the show today. So right now, there is one free agent that a lot of people are surprised, not concerned, but just confused as to why this player has hit the open market and has stayed on the open market for now. You know, we're coming up on the month. It's been about, what, 3 weeks or so? I think July 13th was the date. So nearly 3 weeks has gone by. And Nazem Kadri still remains a free agent for any team to call and make room for. The two teams, apparently, that are very in on him, from what I have listened to, have read, and have heard, the New York Islanders and the Colorado Avalanche. Detroit might be a team sniffing around as well, but those are the two. Carolina, maybe, because they were in on Matthew Tkachuk, but Carolina's, from what I heard with Carolina's, it's the way for Carolina where they're always quote-unquote in on a player, but that just means they're doing the due diligence, as every team should be. But right now, I think it's between the Islanders and the Colorado Avalanche, and a few other people have gone out and said that as well. Elliot Friedman was one of them. For the Colorado Avalanche, I'll start with them because I want to get to the Islanders in just a little bit. For the Colorado Avalanche, they're still around because of one, familiarity, but two, they have to understand the notion of where they're not going to be next year, but the year after. So as of right now, as I'm looking on Cap Friendly, the Colorado Avalanche have $3.9 million in projected cap space. Coming off the books next year will include Andrew Cogliano and Darren Helm, who each have 1 year left on deals of $1.25 million. Those were just re-signed. JT Compher comes off the books at $3.5 million. That'll be really nice. Eric Johnson comes off the books in 1 year at $6 million. Why does all this matter? That sounds like a lot of money. They could find a way. One, it's all next year. But two, after this season, Nathan MacKinnon is set to be an unrestricted free agent. I understand how important and integral Nazem Kadri was to the Colorado Avalanche this season. He doesn't have to prove anything anymore. Nazem Kadri doesn't have to prove anything. I'm blown away he hasn't signed anywhere else. But Colorado needs to think ahead and go, okay, Nathan MacKinnon has been on our books 4 years at $6.3 million. He has been worth more than $6.3 million for some time. His current contract was a 7-year deal with a $6.3 million cap hit, which he signed in 2016. That deal has phenomenally worked out in Colorado's favor. And Nathan MacKinnon is now waiting for the season to end before he gets paid. Now, he's gone on the record before saying he's willing to take a little bit less to stay with the team to keep people together. A little bit less is probably still going to be a $5 million upgrade. Because of right now, Nathan MacKinnon will, I'm assuming that number is going to start. That conversation will be in the 11s to begin with. I would not be surprised if it hit 12. But that's Colorado's number one priority. And I totally understand why. You've got to worry about Nathan MacKinnon first before you can go Nazem Kadri. The other thing, they've just re-signed Arturi Lehkonen to a 5-year deal at said $4.5 million, which was what Nazem Kadri was making prior. Nazem Kadri's probably looking in that $7-7.5 million range, which in my opinion is still kind of a steal. And I just do not think that Colorado is looking around and they're going, there's no one we can do. Mikko Rantanen's at 925. Landis Cogg's locked in now for seven over the next little bit. Valerian Nichushkin signed that 8-year, $6.125 million deal. From what I understood, Colorado made the decision. Then Nichushkin was up, Lehkonen was up, Kadri was up. They re-signed Nichushkin and Lehkonen and used that couple extra $1 million instead of going up and getting Kadri and then not being able to fill up their bottom roles. They took Lehkonen and Nichushkin and then followed up by signing 1-year deals of Cogliano and Darren Helm to keep that bottom core together. And those guys they felt were very valuable to their cup run. Now the other team that I want to get in on, the New York Islanders. I don't know if this is a Lou Lamoriello thing. I don't know if this is the way the Islanders go about business, or they're being cautious or doing their due diligence first. But right now, the Islanders have $11.185 million in cap space. They have 19 players signed on the roster right now. They've got their picks. Why aren't the Islanders just making this announcement? Because it seems to be a legitimate fit. One, you want another center, kind of to go along with Matthew Barzal. Matthew Barzal has one more year left on his deal at $7 million, and then he's an RFA. But Anders Lee's locked in, Brock Nelson's locked in. Now, Lee and Nelson both play center, but I know that sometimes those guys end up playing the wing. Josh Bailey can play either wing. Jean-Gabriel Pageau can play center as well. He's got a few more years left at five. If you want Barzal to be your one, right, and then, I don't know, JP Pageau maybe is your two, but maybe he's more suited for like a three role. You could slip Nazem Kadri right in the middle. You can throw Barzal on the wing. You can throw Lee at center. You can throw Nelson at center. This would give the Islanders so many options to orchestrate their top six and have a legitimate top six center full time for probably pretty good value. The only thing I'm thinking with Nazem Kadri is he's a little bit older. You know what's funny? The Islanders and Lou Lamoriello, they have a history of signing older players to contracts. Look at Kyle Palmieri and the deal that he signed. Kyle Palmieri, now he's not old. I'm not saying Kyle Palmieri is old whatsoever. But right now he's 31 years of age. He signed that 4-year deal when he was 30. So if you sign Kadri to a 5 or 6-year deal at age 30, 31, I believe, it's not like it's the Islanders are going out of their way to do something about that. This would be honestly right up the alleyway of the New York Islanders. And Nazem Kadri right now is 31 years of age. And Nazem Kadri, for the longest time, has grossly outplayed his contracts. His latest one was that 6-year deal. Hilariously, he signed it while he was in Toronto. The general manager of the Maple Leafs at the time was Lou Lamoriello. Now, he's had issues with Lou Lamoriello, so I'm wondering if that might be a reason why nothing's been announced or it hasn't been signed. There might be some business already done, or they've already had conversations, or Lou's camp has reached out, or Kadri's camp has reached out. But it's funny that Kadri could be going to the team where the general manager, where he signed his last contract, was with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and so was Nazem Kadri. For the Islanders, it just makes the most sense in the world. And I don't understand what the reasoning is, because they did this last time with, I don't know if it was Ryan Suter. It wasn't Ryan Suter. It was Zach Parise. They were talking about potentially signing Ryan Suter. But it was Parise and Palmieri, and the announcements weren't made until, what was it, weeks before the NHL regular season began? It was way too close, but everyone had already known that the players had signed. They were just waiting for the quote-unquote official announcement. But the Islanders, to me, make the most sense. One, it gives you a little bit of a blanket over Matthew Barzal. And Barzal, not that he's going to learn more from Kadri, but he might. But he'll also get a little bit more experience there. He'll get a little bit more tutelage from his captain, Anders Lee, and, you know, Brock Nelson and all those other guys that can play a multitude of positions, Jean-Gabriel Pageau. The Islanders, to me, make the most sense. And a lot of people pointing to a lot of very legitimate reasons as to why they will eventually land him. I think right now Kadri wants term, and teams might be only wanting to do maybe that four, maybe 5 years, because that would put Kadri at 36. And teams are like, we're not giving you 7 years because that takes you to 38. Even 6 years. That AAV has to come way down if it's a 6-year deal. So I think right now the waiting period continues on, but that news has dried up. Kadri's kind of that last domino to fall for the time being, so we'll see what happens until then. One player we will get to that has signed a deal after getting new representation, John Klingberg, newest defenseman for the Anaheim Ducks. Now, a few things. One, this deal tells me a lot about the market and where it is right now. I'll get into the deal. So let's start off with this. It's a bet on himself deal. I think Klingberg was looking for that 7-8 year contract as well, because a lot of players are looking for that term. I think enough teams now have made the mistake of signing those 6-7 year deal to players age 30 or older, and they've just aged so poorly. Like the years where Milan Lucic and Louis Eriksson, you know, those guys signed those 6-year deals. Kyle Okposo was another one that signed a pretty long one. David Clarkson, that 7-year deal for Toronto, even though the AAV was like 5-something, it was abysmal. But it was all these deals going to guys who are 30 or over, and you were paying for what they were prior to their 30s. You were buying what they had done in the NHL so far, not for this is what we think you're going to be when you come to us. That's why so many players, young players, are signing those deals. And you look at them and you're like, that's an overpayment. And then as the years go on, those players have not only grown into that contract, but they've exceeded it. Cale Makar, Austin Matthews, $11.6 million. Everyone's like, this kid is, why? Why are we giving him back-to-back Rocket Richard winner and a Hart winner and a Ted Lindsay winner? Right? Not that saying, you know, Leon Draisaitl signed that, what was it, almost $9 million deal at the time before he exploded. Everyone's like, I don't know. It's a lot of, is anybody arguing that deal now? Nevertheless, this deal now tells me two things about the market. One, the money for top end or top tier players is not what it used to be, along with term. Ergo, what I was just saying, those 7-8 year deals for players in their 30s do not exist anymore. They're gone. Teams are way too hesitant. They have seen the backfiring of these deals and have really shown over the last little bit, and teams are not making those deals anymore. Two, the money that teams do have available are either on those one-year deals like we saw with John Klingberg and like bet-on-yourself deals, or that money is being used for middle-to-bottom six players with term or bottom-pairing players with term and would rather spend them on bargain players and spread money around to players on a multitude of players with maybe a little bit less talent, but a little bit more track record. Here's a perfect example for you. Erica Branson signed a four-year contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets for almost $4.5 million a season. Now, a lot of people made fun of that deal. It's not a great one. But Colorado, Josh Manson, four-year deal, $4.5 million. Teams would rather save $3 million and get a little bit more term, even if it means like the age-wise, even if the age in there, they would rather give out term if it means the AAV is around that $4 million range than give out those massive deals. Why? Because God forbid they don't turn out well. I feel like they're somewhat easier to move. Like with a player who has some sort of cap at like $4 million, you're like, listen, we'll eat $1 million or $2 million of it. But think about how hard it was for Vancouver to trade Louis Erickson with that contract. Think about it for a second. Look at what had to be dealt, what had to come back. Louis Erickson was off the books, but in exchange, they're not taking on Oliver Ekman-Larsson's contract, which is also not great. It's like $7.125 million. Those contracts with those AAVs hitting $6, $7 million with multiple years of term left are grossly more difficult to move. And I'm not just saying that, like, this isn't me going through analytics, going through numbers. This is what happened. Columbus and teams like Colorado and Columbus would rather spend $4 to $4.5 million on a player like Josh Manson or Erica Branson and give them 4 years than sign a John Klingberg to a six-year deal at $7 million. John Klingberg, arguably better than both those players. They bring different skill sets, but John Klingberg, significantly better offensively, not nearly the defensive guy. Now, Colorado doesn't need that player because they've got a guy in Cale Makar. But Colorado viewed Josh Manson and said, we like his skill set, what that player brings to the table more than what John Klingberg does, and we get him for $3 million less. And that's what they did. Now, having said that, I like this deal for Klingberg. I like this deal for the Ducks. Why? It's a lot of money. Well, the Ducks have a boatload of cap space and they got to get to the floor. They are now at the floor with that money. They were not hitting the floor. They've got youngsters like Trevor Zegras, Troy Terry, Jamie Drysdale. There's a lot of young talent that is yet to be paid on that team, and they need to find players to pay. Now, there's also a lot of other players still available. But Klingberg comes in, one, he's the biggest defensive free agent market that was left. It's a one-year deal at $7 million. And if the Ducks aren't good again this season, you can flip him for a first and a second round pick or a first and a third round pick next year and eat half his contract without worrying about anything in the world. Why? You've got the cap space to do it. They essentially have bought themselves draft picks if they are not a good team by the deadline and sell out Klingberg to a team who's looking for a right-hand shot top four defenseman. And I guarantee you there will be at least a dozen teams that will need that. There will be teams inquiring for John Klingberg. Maybe not a dozen, but there will be at least 5-6 teams. John Klingberg gets made available and they are on it. They're sending out prospects, picks, and the Ducks would be like, yeah, we'll eat cap, no problem. Why? Because they can. And now actually the Ducks have a pretty good decor while Klingberg is there with Jamie Drysdale, Kevin Shattenkirk, and Cam Fowler. They lost Hampus Lindholm and Josh Manson. But for the time being, the Ducks also got picks for those guys. And they are just continuing to build and build and build. And I like the deal. It all makes sense. They bet on themselves. Hey, if it works out, The Ducks have a top four defenseman who's probably going to put up 40 points in a full season, maybe more. He's had seasons where he's put up 50. And if not, he's a good mentor for a guy like Jamie Drysdale. And when he does go, they get more pieces for it and they can continue the rebuild. That is how it is done. And now John Klingberg gets a chance to give himself a one-year prove-it deal. And maybe he signs a 3 or 4 year extension after this season if he has a monster year. I think either way, it's a good deal for everybody. The Ducks win. Klingberg gets paid, gets a chance to prove he can put up great numbers again and reestablish himself and maybe come in for a big payday next year. We'll see. All right, so I want to get to here. I want to do a couple of players who are going to have their jerseys hung in the rafters this coming season. And one in particular, I think, gets a ton of recognition. The other guy doesn't. I want to start with the guy that does get the recognition, and that is San Jose Sharks will be retiring Patrick Marleau's number 12 prior to their club's game against the Chicago Blackhawks on February 25th of 2023. That announcement was done last week. Marleau is going to be the first player in franchise history to ever receive that honor, which kind of blows my mind. The next player, I believe, will be Joe Thornton at some point. Wouldn't be shocking if Pavelski, but now they've really got some players with some legacy, but Marleau really was, you know, him and Thornton were really those OGs for a while. He wore the C for a little bit. He is the all-time NHL leader in games played with 1,779 games while scoring 566 goals and having 631 assists as well. 23-year career. He played 195 playoff games and registered 127 points during that time. He is also the all-time leader in goals and points as a member of the San Jose Sharks, drafted second overall back in 1997. The only stat that he does not lead in is assists, and of course, that is Jumbo Joe. So Marleau's going to get his jersey retired. I love when he came over from Toronto. I know the tenure was only a couple of years and he eventually got traded, but he is one of those guys you hear about as being one of the nicest human beings, always very humble about what he did and very always gave back to his teammates, to his family, to the organization, whoever he was employed by. And it was only fitting that he retired a San Jose Shark playing his final season there before calling it a career. He reached out and said, "I cannot begin to describe the way I feel. I'm truly grateful and thankful for the recognition, but also being able to play in front of the great San Jose Sharks fans for so long. I'll miss doing so for the rest of my life. Thank you to the Sharks organization, my teammates throughout my career, and especially the fans for this honor of a lifetime." So awesome stuff from Patrick Marleau. He's getting his jersey retired. The other guy that I really do not think got the recognition that he deserved is Dustin Brown. Dustin Brown is going to get his jersey, number 23, retired. That game will be happening on February 11th at Crypto.com Arena. They announced this last week as well. He will be the seventh number retired in franchise history. He will join Hockey Hall of Fame goaltender Rogi Vatchin, Marcel Dion, Dave Taylor, Wayne Gretzky, Luke Robitaille, and Rob Blake in the rafters. It's actually crazy, too, because in the article, it says he's getting some star treatment. He'll also become the third Kings player to have a statue outside of the arena, joining Gretzky and Robitaille. Quick couple of hits on him. Brown played his final game May 14th as the Edmonton Oilers eliminated the Kings in the first round this past season. This is where I think he is not getting the recognition he deserves. One, he's going to be joining Gretzky and Robitaille with statues. Why, you ask? He has spent his entire 18-year career with the Kings since being drafted 13th overall in 2003. He has captained the team to two Stanley Cup victories in 2012 and 2014, which, by the way, makes him the only American player in NHL history to ever do that. Not Mark Messier, not Brett Hull. Dustin Brown is the only American captain in NHL history to lead his team to two Stanley Cup victories. That's insane to me. He is the franchise's all-time leader in games played with 1,296 games, sixth all-time in goals, 325, and eighth in assists with 387, seventh in points, 712. He also added nearly 50 points in 92 career playoff games, which included 34 points in the 46 games en route to the Kings' pair of Stanley Cup victories. He was also the captain from 2008 to 2009, all the way to the 2015-2016 season. The reason I say that I don't think he got the recognition he deserved was because of those accolades. The fact that he's the first American-born player to ever lead his team to two Stanley Cup victories, that blows my mind. That's something else. Now, mind you, there are better American-born players in this game. Patrick Kane has an assistant captain in Chicago with three Stanley Cups. He also won, I think, a Conn Smythe at some point. Brett Hull was one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. But it's not as often when you hear an American-born captain of a team. That's, I think, the integral part, is the fact that he was, you know, that goes another way. Like, we see Canadian-born captains in American cities. Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Toews, guys like that. And I think lost a little bit in the shadows are sometimes American-born players, specifically captains, and all the feats that have gone under. And I think right here is a perfect example of that. Now, a lot of people are saying that right now, Patrick Kane's arguably the greatest American player of all time, just based on accolades, points. And I mentioned some other really great names. Dustin Brown was also a part of a couple of the Olympic squads when the States took on Canada in the finals, I believe in 06, if not 06, 2010. I just feel that what Dustin Brown brought to the table, and I think he had a couple really down years where everyone had kind of written him off. But I just remember in those early, 2010 series when the Kings were just, they were an absolute juggernaut. Dustin Brown was always a player you hated going against. He could score. He was a 20-goal scorer. He hit like a freight train. He's physical. He's tough on the boards. Like, that's a guy you want to go to battle with. That's a guy who you want to be your captain. And I think that the recognition for him was kind of going under the radar in regard to Patrick Marleau. And I just think that two-time Stanley Cup winner, entire career with one team. Not a lot of players that get a chance to say that. And almost 100 career playoff games with the organization and captain for, 8 years? I think Dustin Brown in LA is getting the recognition he deserves, and rightfully so. Congratulations to him and Marleau for getting their jerseys raised to the rafters. All right, the last story I want to get to here. Former Montreal Canadiens head coach Dominic Ducharme was disappointed to discover that he wasn't on the same page as the new club's executive, saying that he wasn't even given an opportunity to provide his perspective before being let go and seeing how well Martin St-Louis is doing over there. I've heard this with a lot of fields before, but I know specifically in the sporting world, coaching is a very fickle position to be in. You can be on top of the hockey world. You can dominate for years and years. You can lead your team to a Stanley Cup victory. And the moment things don't go your way, you're out. So this is what he said when he talked to The Athletic, Marc-Antoine Godin, about his perspective on everything. He said, quote, "That's the side of it that hurts, or that's the most disappointing to me, is not having the chance to sit down with them to tell them how I saw hockey. If the plan was to lose as many games as we could and to play the young players, I would have liked to have known, because I would have had a different approach with them. I was trying to squeeze as much as I could everywhere to try and get some results. I saw teams that had games canceled because of five of their players had COVID. We had 10 and another 8 who were injured, and we still played." So the way that apparently he was let go was apparently the direction he did not have an opportunity to give his side of the story, his coaching tactics or anything like that. And of course, when Marty St. Louis walked in, he was everything went right. Everything went great. Cole Caulfield was scoring. Suzuki was back. Team was winning games. They were competitive. Just remember, Dominic Ducharme was the individual that took over after the firing of Claude Julien back in 2001 and then led the team to a Stanley Cup Finals berth after taking over in February. And then, of course, the quote-unquote injuries and the play had the Habs spiraling. And this was never on the coach, in my opinion. We all called this. We all said, hey, the Habs are not going to be nearly as good as they were on their cup run. It was a great Cinderella story. Everyone was like, they'll be a playoff team. They'll do this. And I'm like, A lot of people said, hold on. A lot of teams were really good. And now the divisions go back. And of course, they did not live up to the name. It's funny to me, but also unsurprising, that the general manager and their management side had a miscommunication with the coaching staff on the direction of the team and what they actually wanted out of their team following the Stanley Cup run. Because normally when that happens, you often go, well, run it back. We made it this far, let's run it back. But this was a very intriguing case. And I think that the brass kind of knew, but didn't want to admit it to the coach, because the coach has to go in front of the media every day. And all of a sudden, if the coach is getting asked, hey, why are you coaching our team like this? Why are you coaching the team like this? We just went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. What's happening? The coach can't walk up and say, we've met with our general managers and our management team, and we feel this is the direction that the organization wants to go in. You know, the coach is like, we're doing what we can. It's not working this year. We're trying to figure out some things and get put in the right position to succeed. I'm not saying that any of this, by the way, is true or factual or anything like that. But doesn't it make sense? Because, of course, Montreal fired their general manager, Marc Bergevin, in November, immediately named Jeff Gorton the executive vice president of hockey operations, and then hired Kent Hughes as their GM in January. And apparently the new brass didn't really say a whole lot, and then immediately fired Ducharme a month later, replacing him with Marty St. Louis, and everything started working out great. The whole thing seemed like a disconnect, in my opinion, because you had, to begin the season, the management staff and coach that were just part of the team in the finals. In November, the GM was gone. In January, the new GM was hired, and in February, the old coach was fired, who was then replaced by Martin St. Louis. A lot of change, a lot of disconnect, a lot of opportunity where communicating, the communication factor didn't quite hit. And I think that in theory, the team was trying to relay what the plan of the team was. But I think as each party was getting picked off, the people who were still around the organization weren't in the loop for what the plan was for the future, because they were probably being let go anyways and went, what's the point in telling them the plan if we're just going to let them go? So I understand where Ducharme's coming from. Also, your team sucked. You went from Stanley Cup Finals to being 32nd in the league. No team ever has gone from finals berth to dead last in the NHL. I do not believe that's ever happened ever. It's never happened to 32nd. So to an extent, I get it. But the moral of the story here is coaching is fickle. Positions in the National Hockey League are fickle. And one moment you can be 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup, the next you can be let go and replaced within a 6-month time frame. It's a tough go regardless. It's been a tough couple of years. It's been a tough, I guess, last year for the Habs, and they are really looking to swing and turn around and move forward and hopefully get back in a direction of winning some hockey games and playing some meaningful hockey again. All right, before we head on out here, a few deals that we got to get to. Let's start New Jersey. They came to terms with restricted free agent Jesper Bratt on a one-year deal worth about $5.4 million. Bratt was one of the better young players on the New Jersey Devils this past season, and they avoid arbitration with the signing. Good on Bratt. There's a lot of really good young players, and I think this is a good one-year deal. One for New Jersey to kind of give themselves an extra year to kind of figure out, all right, who's the core of this team, who we keep, and who's going to go, because you've got Hischier, Hughes is locked in for a little bit. They've got a couple good young defensemen. They're going to figure out their goaltending situation. You know, they don't have the contract to PK Subban sitting on the books anymore, so they've got some things to figure out, and Bratt coming back for a season is good news to them. It's a good another year push for Bratt, and then maybe he gets paid next season. Ottawa Senators signed forward Matthew Joseph to a four-year deal with an AAV of $2.95 million. He was an RFA who was acquired from the Tampa Bay Lightning with a fourth-round pick in exchange for the Nick Paul trade. He's 25 years of age, played pretty well offensively when he joined the Sens. He had 4 goals and 8 assists in 11 games. He had a total of 30 points across 69 games this past season. He might be a player that really jumps off the page over the next couple of years. He might be looking to maybe get into the 40-50 point range in an increased role with Ottawa. So good on Matthew Joseph, 25. He's basically signed throughout his 20s now. It's a great deal for both parties. Joseph gets a big pay raise, and the Ottawa Senators lock in yet another player. Carolina Hurricanes signed defenseman Ethan Bear. It is a one-year, $2.2 million deal. They avoid arbitration. They acquired Ethan Bear from Edmonton last offseason in exchange for Warren Fogle. He had 14 points in 58 games, averaging about 16 minutes per contest in his debut season with Carolina. New York Rangers and Kaapo Kakko. I know this was happening last week, but they signed restricted free agent to a two-year deal with an AAV of $2.1 million. Hasn't lived up to the draft capital that was spent on him, of course, being a lottery pick. He has just 58 points through 157 games. Maybe if he doesn't work out, it's an easier contract to move with some term, or it gives Kakko another opportunity. Hey, maybe we can make you fit here. Nevertheless, those two parties come to agreements. Kakko staying in New York for 2 more years. Penguins re-signing forward Danton Heinen last week to a one-year deal with a $1 million cap hit. This is wild to me. 1 year, $1 million deal. He had a career-high 18 goals and 15 assists in 76 games in his first season with the Penguins. It's nearly an identical deal that he just signed, a one-year, $1.1 million deal. The fact that Danton Heinen only making $1 million next season after putting up 18 goals, to me, is insane. To me, shows that money isn't the most important thing, and if another season comes, he's waiting for the market to go up a little bit, and then maybe he cashes in. But a great move for Pittsburgh. Danton Heinen, happy to be in Pittsburgh. That one-year deal at $1 million. And the Seattle Kraken signed unrestricted free agent forward Ryan Donato. It is a one-year deal with $1.2 million. Also 26. Also, career high, 16 goals, 15 assists, playing 14 minutes a night. Another 30-point, 16-goal guy, only signing $1.2 million. It's crazy to me how guys who are putting up double-digit goals, nearly 20 goals, are going for $1.2 million. I'm blown away that Sonny Milano is still on the market right now, but good on Seattle. They get another good depth forward, a really good price range, and, you know, they're slowly coming together as well. So we'll see. Still some names on the market. PK Subban, like I mentioned. We have Nazem Kadri, Sonny Milano. The goaltending market's not really there, but maybe we get a couple more names trickling in. But arbitration hearings are going to be happening soon as well. So we'll start hearing those deals start to fall into place. But nevertheless, it continues to be relatively quiet on the news front right now, and we'll have to wait and see for something big to happen until then. That is it for the pod today. Thank you so much for being patient and waiting the extra day for this to come out. Follow along Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Instagram, and Twitter, ST Hockey Podcast. Go enjoy the warm weather, the sun. We are into the month of August now. And soon training camp will be around the corner in September, and then preseason games, and then regular season games, and we can get back into some regularly scheduled hockey programming. Enjoy the week. I'll see you next week. Until then, that's a wrap.